south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's see if we can ruffle a few feathers today and coax a few haters out of the woodwork. Yep, there are haters out there, all right, but isn't it funny they still keep listening? But you know what keeps you sane in this business, or how I stay sane? I just don't engage in any kind of social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instacrap. Though frequently listeners send me emails with excerpts from anti-social media, saying, Johnny, look at the crap they're saying about you. But I don't care. You know what they say. The more flack you get, the closer you are to the target. So that's why I don't engage in that stuff. So what do I occupy myself with as far as tech? I watch the occasional YouTube, educational stuff. I'm all over the place, you know. Like how to make gingerbread cookies, how to blow up planet-sized asteroids. And I have my favorite handful of podcasts I listen to, too. But as for social media, I'm just not on it. And you know, it's true. Every show has its lovers and haters. But I know this from observation. It's dangerous to your mental health to read comments and hang on social media. You must know that already. Because, you know, social media is a distorted reality. To me, it's like driving on the highway, having road rage without a filter. I mean, look, how many times has someone cut you off or some old lady in front of you is going 12 miles an hour? What you'd really like to do is ram the old lady to wake her up and sideswipe the guy that's hogging the road next to you. But you don't do that, right? Because it'll have real negative consequences. Well, on social media, people just blast away without a filter and there are no consequences for the blaster. Though in many cases, the blastee can't help but feel some of the effects. People say all kinds of nasty crap about other people. They say things about people they'd never say to their faces in real life, or they might get decked or their clock cleaned. Now, there's an interesting saying, getting your clock cleaned. Where'd that come from? You know, it's so easy on social media to hammer someone you've never met before. You've never seen once in person or even talked to. Now, you might disagree, but to me, that's pretty cowardly. And people who live for social media are just idiots who've never had a voice, a life, or real friends or an audience before. But everyone wants attention. They want to be heard. They want their 15 minutes or win the social media lottery. That means creating a meme or something that goes viral. Suddenly, everyone's got a voice and they think they're important enough to be heard. Even though most of social media is just throwaway garbage, useless, vomitous drivel. So for peace of mind, I just don't engage. It's too toxic. I don't crave the extra dopamine. Thank you very much. Besides that, if you're doing a show or a podcast like this, and you pay attention to social media, you're likely to self-censor. You're liable to start worrying too much about what other people think and start playing to the masses. The thing is, though, it's like the complaint or customer service department at a big company like Costco. Man, I don't know how a person could have a job like that 8 hours a day. Or, for example, if you've ever been a waiter or waitress at a restaurant, there are always a certain few people that just rub you the wrong way. Unfortunately, some of them turn out to be regulars who, when they walk in, you roll your eyes because you know, it's going to be a rough ride. As they say in business school, it's that certain 5% of customers are clients. Those chronic complainers are attention hogs who rob 90% of your time. Call them energy suckers, time vampires, same thing. You know, the guy or gal you don't want to sit next to at a party. Too bad we all know some of those, and some of them we're stuck with because they're childhood friends or family. So how do you get rid of those time vampires? Cut them out of your life without causing a scene or too much embarrassment? Or seeming like too much of a dickhead yourself? Well, you just vote with your feet and come to Latin America. That way you never have to tell them to their faces that they're whiny, boring, time-sucking asswipes. You can blame the disconnect and why you're cutting ties with them on your plan B. It's easy. Blame it on your plan B. And man, I'll tell you, when I left the States 30-plus years ago, I left behind a few time vampires myself. Once I finally landed and got settled in, every time I was having second thoughts about it, I'd just think about those time vampires I left behind and wondering who they're sucking energy from now. Yep, we're talking about those positive, unintended consequences of getting the hell out of Dodge. In fact, the first few years I was down, before the internet and all that, I used to tell people one of the best things about living in Latin America was that I knew for sure if the phone rang, it wasn't for me. I did not have what you might call phone anxiety. That'd be the old school equivalent to today's social media anxiety. You know, that little jolt of anxiety that comes through when you hear the little notification on your phone when a message comes through. I notice with a lot of people, especially millennials and Gen Xers, those messages and how fast they respond to them kind of rule their lives. Believe me, I'm not that guy. Now, I know I must piss off a lot of people because oftentimes when I get a message, I don't answer it for a couple hours, even sometimes a day or two. I know what some is considered rude and thoughtless if you don't jump right on it, especially when you're dealing with those dating and Cupid sites. In fact, I was talking to an idiot gringo the other day here in Latin America. Yep, that's right. I said idiot gringo, who's all over those Cupid sites making dates with Latinas. And he told me when he shoots him a message on WhatsApp or whatever, if they don't answer within 3 or 4 minutes, he takes it personally. In some cases, he reads it as a sign they've got other men on the line. In other words, they're two-timing him or 3 or 4 or 5-timing him. Which strikes me as kind of odd because he's got 5 or 6 girls on the line he's texting back and forth, and he's worried about the girls he's texting doing the same thing. And after meeting this guy and talking to him a little bit at a party, I can understand why the ladies might not think he's such a good catch. Then again, he was bragging how beautiful these Latinas were that he was texting to. Now remember, I just met this guy and he's revealing huge chunks of his dating and personal life I had absolutely no interest in. He showed me his girlfriends on WhatsApp, and every single one of those girls had sent him a very sexy near-naked photo of herself. And to shut him down a bit, I shook my head and said, you know, rule number one on those dating sites, unless you're looking strictly for sex, never date a woman who sends you a naked shot of herself. Those are not the kind of girls you take to Sunday dinner at mom's house. Then I said, I bet they're all hitting you up for money, right? And you're sending it to them. Then he nodded and I said, let me guess. Stop me if you haven't heard these excuses before. Microwave oven broke down. Dad needs new teeth. Mom had to go to the emergency room. She's short on this month's rent. And I just kept going. I went down the list of excuses. No doubt he had the gringo advantage and all. And certainly, he thought that being a gringo helped him get his foot in the door, relationship-wise, that is. But I said, just a word of advice. I told him, you know, if you're going to hook up with girls who send naked pictures of themselves to you, you don't need the gringo advantage, just money. Now, what I'd noticed just talking with this guy a couple of minutes, he was giving off vibes of a whiny time vampire. Sure, that gringo advantage means a lot, but personality and attitude have quite a bit of weight too. In his case, he got the extra 2 points for being a gringo, but a -2 for personality and attitude, so it was a wash. Hey, it takes all kinds, right? The thing is, though, with this guy, he spoke very little Spanish, so he was using Google Translate to talk to his naked girlfriend text buddies on WhatsApp. And Google Translate does not quite allow you to transmit your personality or attitude, which in his case was a good thing. Enough said about that guy, but there really are lots of idiot or maybe more or less naive gringos down here doing the same thing as that guy. So anyway, I was at this party. I met another guy who told me a story that was very interesting. Let me back this up by saying, you know, I've said many times before, Venezuelans are everywhere. More than 6 million of them have left the country. That's way more than 20% of their adult population. They've just gotten the hell out of their own socialist hell version of Dodge. A lot of them escaped by the skin of their teeth, by hook and crook, without 2 pesos to rub together. Anyway, I'm at this Latino house party. People are dancing and everything. There was 2 other gringos there besides me. And wouldn't you know it, everyone was dancing except us gringos. One, a property manager who rents out villas and stuff to wealthy gringos, and that idiot gringo I mentioned was one of his clients. Anyway, there was a wide mix of nationalities there, Latino nationalities, that is. Venezuelans, Colombians, Mexicans, all kinds. Anyway, this one really built guy, must have been around 35 years old. He could dance, man. I mean, Latinos can dance anyway, but this guy, he could make those Dancing with the Stars winners look like Stephen Hawking. So anyway, I'm on this patio sofa, smoking a Cuban cigar. The guy sits down next to me. We exchange a few words. I find out he's Venezuelan. And he said, why aren't you out there dancing? I said, because I'm a gringo and we're missing that dance gene, especially with guys like you out there. Where'd you learn how to dance? He said, it was part of my training, my footwork. I said, oh, you're a professional dancer then. He said, no, I'm a boxer. Or former boxer, he said. Turns out, he said, when he was in Venezuela, he was a lightweight champion. Had 17 wins, never lost a match. But then he had a kid, got married, had to go to work and all that stuff. And his wife forced him to quit boxing. And that's when the story got interesting. I said, what are you doing here in Panama? He said, I'm on my way to the U.S. I said, you're a long way from the States. Why Panama now? Now, of course, I know there's no flights in and out of the United States to Venezuela. Everyone knows that. That stopped a long time ago. So, to get out of Venezuela, people just sneak into the neighboring countries. Colombia, Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, Peru. Their first stop is almost always another South American country. And they mostly end up staying there. Somewhere in South America, because it's logistically much easier. But this guy was in Panama. And I said, so what's your plan? He said, well, I got a brother living in the States. My jammy, where else? He told me he's been there over 5 years. He's got his residency. Anyway, this guy told me, turns out Venezuelans can travel visa-free to Panama. Almost all other Latin American countries, too. In other words, if a Venezuelan can get to any Latin American country, even if they sneak in, as long as their passport's valid, they get an automatic tourist visa for 90 days, and in the case of Mexico, 180. So within that time frame, they're totally legal. But like he said, he's been in Panama more than 90 days. So his visa expired, and now he's considered an illegal. And as of now, anyway, there are millions of Venezuelans in other Latin American countries illegally, just like him, because after 90 days, they become illegal. They overstay their visas. And that's why he said Venezuelans in other Latin countries, even highly educated ones with bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees, they're working as waiters, waitresses, doing construction work, road work, grunt work, anything they can get, because when you get a tourist visa, you can't work on the books. Because just like you and I and every other gringo who travels to a Latin American country, we get a tourist visa for 90 days, in the case of Mexico, 180. But it's just a tourist visa. We don't have permission to work. The theory is we're arriving as tourists and are going to spend money in their country, not make money or take a job away from a local. Yeah, fat chance, right? But anyway, that's the law. Of course, you know, and you've heard me say this before, we can start a business and hire people, but we just can't work ourselves. In other words, you can be the boss, hire local employees legally and all that, but we ourselves are not allowed to work, not on the books anyway. Now, that might sound crazy and prohibitive to you, you know, the restrictions that you can't work, but you can own a business, but there's a huge loophole there. Any business will open a bank account, right? You know, to pay your expenses, your bills, your workers and all that. And whatever's left over at the end of the month is yours because you're the owner. And that bank account will be in your name or an SA corporation. That's even better. And you're the signatory on that or your lawyer is. It's your money. You can take it out at will. Or transfer it to another bank account or another country at will, or another person at will, if you like. In other words, as long as you don't write yourself a check as an employee of that company or business, no matter how big or small it is, you are strictly, or actually more loosely, within the letter of the law. People do it all the time. It's been going on like that for years. And Latin governments are really lenient about that and look the other way because you're hiring local employees for your business. You're adding to, not taking from, the local economy. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking to my new Latin American friend, Boxeador, and Dancing Fool. Anyway, he said his first stop was Panama, by boat. He said there are lots of clandestine boat services that'll take you from Venezuela to any of the nearby countries. That'd be Aruba, Curaçao, Suriname, Dominican Republic, Trinidad, etc. for $200. No questions asked, no IDs necessary. In fact, he says you meet on a beach or a pier, you shove off at night with no lights at all on the boat. To avoid Venezuelan government patrols and all that. They're always on the lookout for people escaping because it is a big problem. A huge diaspora, brain drain and all that. By the way, he said every couple of weeks you hear about one of those boats sinking with all hands on board. After all, they're small boats in a big ocean. They hold maybe 12 to 20 people. And he said if you get caught by the Venezuelan Coast Guard, they'll take you back to shore, question you, and take all your money, jewelry, and everything valuable you've got on you and let you go. That's why they run at night with no lights until they hit international waters. Anyway, this guy told me a couple of months ago he landed in Panama as his visa ran out. And now he needs that $1,000 or so from his brother to go to the Panama embassy to pay a fine and get his visa renewed so it's in good standing again. Then he can take a plane anywhere he wants in Latin America because, as mentioned, most all Latin countries are visa-free for Venezuelans who can enter as tourists. So his plan includes his brother sending him a grand or so to get his visa fixed up in Panama so he's legal again. Then from Panama, he's going to take a flight to Mexico City. That's about $400 and as mentioned, he goes into Mexico visa-free and has 180 days there. But that doesn't really matter to him because he says once he gets into Mexico, he's going to pay a coyote $5,000 to take him to Texas. His brother in Miami is working that out. And then he says as soon as he crosses the frontier, the border, he's going to break away from the illegal group he's traveling with and give himself up to immigration. That's the plan, he said, to give myself up. Because, and he cracked a big smile and he said, Joe Biden's got this thing going where Venezuelans are never sent back to their country. Once they arrive in the U.S., they get permanent asylum. Because not only is Venezuela a failed socialist state, it's considered a non-friendly enemy regime to the U.S. And so, if you come in and say, hey, I'm a Venezuelan looking for asylum, and then you show them your paperwork, they'll put you in a detention camp for a week up to a month. They'll process you, give you a residence visa, and surprise, surprise, you'll be legal in the U.S. In fact, he said so many Latin Americans know about this loophole now in the States, as far as Venezuelans. The rumor is all those Haitians you hear about on those caravans moving on up to the U.S., guess what they do if they get caught crossing the border to the U.S.? They ditch their Haitian documents, raise their hands in the air, and yell, "We're Venezuelan and need asylum." So without documents, they too are placed in a detention center. But for most of them, it doesn't work. Their accents and their stories trip them up. But it buys them a couple weeks' time to work out some other kind of angle. Of course, I said to the Venezuelan guy, "Aren't you a little worried about the trip up? What can happen to you along the way? You've heard all the stories about rapes and robberies, kidnappings, disappearances." And then he smiled, held his dukes up, and gave me a boxer's pose. And you know, I was thinking, with this guy's confidence, balls, and, well, determination, and if he can't make it, nobody can. Though he did tell me his biggest fear was that someone might steal his documents before he gets there. That's because this Venezuelan asylum situation in the U.S. has created a very fluid underground market for Venezuelan documents. Real, fake, and otherwise. That's what he said. And a lot of the fake ones are so good, they fool immigration people up in the States because there's no easy way to verify them with Venezuelan authorities. The Venezuelan government or authorities won't respond to any inquiries coming from U.S. Immigration or the State Department. So, in that case anyway, a good set of fake documents will take a person a long, long way. In fact, he said a lot of Venezuelans who are actually born there are traveling on their own fake Venezuelan documents because their own genuine passports and ID documents have expired. Once issued, their passports expire in 5 years, and there's no way to get your documents reissued unless you go back to Venezuela. And most people who've escaped will never do that. And if you try to renew your expired Venezuelan passport at a Venezuelan embassy in a Latin country that you're in, there's a 2-year wait. Unless you've got a couple of thousand U.S. dollars, then you can get your documents renewed in 2 weeks. Ah, the wonders of socialism, where everyone's equal, equally corrupt and equally poor. Now, in the past few years, I've met lots of Venezuelans in my travels here in Latin America. And almost all of them, or at least 90, 95% of them, have a trade, a skill, or work career professionals, doctors, lawyers, IT guys, engineers, etc. However, things have changed just in the last half year or so. I'm starting to meet a lot of Venezuelans who have no careers. You know, they're just high school educated average guys and gals. People who've escaped Venezuela just recently. Whereas in the first few exodus waves, the ones that left 5 or so years ago, the people who escaped were the educated and professional classes. In fact, almost all of them, after 5 years or so, are now established in businesses or careers in the countries they landed in, because they were the smartest, brightest, most creative, and the most determined to get the hell out. They were the so-called brain drain. And there's a big difference between the Venezuelans who are coming now and the ones that left years ago. The funny thing is, the bright ones, you see this with both Cubans and Venezuelans, they're just amazed, even dumbfounded, to see that the U.S. is walking down the very same socialist road that destroyed the economies of both of their countries. I hear pretty much the same thing all the time from the smart ones. They say, how can America be so stupid as to let it happen? How did creeping socialism get such a foothold in the good old U.S. of A? They just don't get it. They're baffled. And I just tell them, you know, it didn't happen all at once. It started in the public schools many years ago, even when I was younger. And now virtually all the schools, especially the public schools, are completely contaminated with woke and socialist ideals. That's what Karl Marx said. You could do it all at once with a violent revolution or little by little from within. Now, as for the U.S., people like their standard of living, so they won't go for a violent revolution. Revolutions are too destructive and disruptive. Instead, you just get a huge section of the population used to sitting on their asses and eating junk food and expecting more and more government freebies. Meanwhile, you infiltrate the public schools. And that's not mild anymore. It's not by drips and drabs. What they're teaching is seriously toxic. For example, one listener, Mr. H, writes, "Johnny, my daughter's a recent college graduate. She's a mathematics major, and she went to a U.S. state university. She said the first day of class, everyone had to fill out a privilege quiz to determine how privileged they were or weren't. Everyone had to give themselves a score, a 1 to 10 privilege score. And the next day, they had to give their name and announce their score to the whole class. And then the class spent time discussing what it was like going through life with a high or low privilege score." So in the public schools, anyway, they're turning mathematics lessons into social justice lessons. Man, how could universities have morphed into that? Well, Mr. H, all I can say is I'm so glad I got the hell out of Dodge when I did. Then he says, "Johnny, if you thought it couldn't get any worse, there are some math teachers, when teaching the coordinate plane system, that's, you know, the X and Y axis where you plot a graph. I don't know about you, but back in my day, they'd have, for example, on the X axis, some facts, some data points, like age versus, let's say, death by heart attack or number of cigarettes smoked per day versus heart attacks or number of lung cancer patients on the other axis, the y-axis. In my day, we learned how to plot graphs with scientifically verifiable things, just neutral, measurable statistics and data points. But now, schools are turning mathematics into social justice lessons. For example, they'll have on the x-axis the theme commitment to social justice versus on the y-axis median family income. So these days, the people writing the textbooks in your public schools will try to inject social justice themes into every learning situation imaginable. In fact, get this, I just read an article in the Los Angeles Times. You won't believe this. The author claims in the poor areas of town, the Black and Latino areas, the surface temperature is something like 5 degrees hotter than middle class and wealthy areas due to less shrubs and greenery. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, they're saying that it's hotter and more uncomfortable in the poor areas of town, and that's why people are more prone to violence, crime, and are generally more irritable. All right, so maybe that's true. I know when I'm hot and sweaty, I'm more irritable. But the kicker is that they're saying it was a plan by the privileged city fathers years ago to plant less greenery, less trees and shrubs in the poor areas. You know, let's not spend money on beautification projects in those areas. In fact, let me paraphrase from this article. It says, with the pandemic, income inequality, and now thermal inequalities. Yeah, right. Thermal inequalities. The Latinx and Black communities are bearing the brunt of privileged city planning. As if you're poor or live in a rundown area, you can't plant a tree or shrub yourself. You got to wait for the city to do it. So then let's place the blame for that and inner city crime on white privilege. I repeat, I'm so happy I got the hell out of Dodge when I did. So how's your plan B coming? Oh, and by the way, how many woke people do you know? You know, I've yet to have met a single Latin American person who doesn't speak English, who knows what a woke person is. And when I try to explain it to them, they just don't seem to get it. I get that glazed eye look. To me, that means I made the absolute right choice in coming to Latin America. Thank God for lag time. Meanwhile, everyone's sending me emails about this El Salvador news that they're building a city dedicated just to Bitcoin. Bitcoin City. Backed by, get this, $1 billion in Bitcoin bonds. Yeah, they're going to sell some bonds. Bitcoin bonds. And here's the thing, man, is this a good idea? If you relocate to Bitcoin City or certain other locations in El Salvador, you'll pay zero income tax, zero capital gains tax, zero property tax, zero payroll tax, and zero municipal taxes. On top of that, all the greenies and tree huggers will love you, since the energy needed to mine Bitcoin in El Salvador will be coming from volcano and geothermal power. That means there'll be zero CO2 emissions. By the way, when El Salvador floats that $1 billion Bitcoin bond issue, they're going to use half of that dough to build Bitcoin City and the other half to buy Bitcoin straight out and put it in their treasury. And you know, what's funny is when El Salvador said they're going to make Bitcoin legal tender right alongside the US dollar, which has been their legal tender since about the new millennium, they were immediately attacked and scolded by the US Treasury Department, the IMF, the US Federal Reserve, the World Bank, and the European Union. All the big banksters were poo-pooing and wagging their fingers. No, no, no. You shouldn't do that. It might upset the apple cart. You'll give other countries ideas. Meanwhile, little El Salvador, which most of the world never even heard of before, is now on everybody's map, and it's in the news all the time. They're getting great rewards from all this. Investors and innovators are pouring in, you know, and the best kind, too. One thing about crypto, it attracts the best minds and talents in the whole world. That's why I always say to people who say, Johnny, it's a Ponzi scheme, or it's going to go to zero, implode, whatever. I say, obviously, you have not done your homework. If you go to the job boards of any internet listings for international jobs and career opportunities, techies with crypto knowledge are in massive demand. More than any other career, crypto is sucking in the best and the brightest brains by far. So think of it. If the best brains in all the world are in crypto right now, what do they know that us average or slightly above average people don't? They absolutely know one thing. It is the future. Do you think all these brilliant internet geeks would waste their careers and their lives on something that wasn't absolutely cutting edge? Don't you get it? It's a whole new paradigm. That's why I don't even like to get into discussions with crypto critics. They're just showing me they have an incomplete education. None of them are half as smart, even on their best days, of some of the guys I know that are in crypto development. It reminds me of the 90s and the old days when the internet was around, but average people didn't use it because it was too difficult. There weren't any good search engines. Most people didn't even use email. connections were spotty, and word processors were clunky green screen things. Remember those? And those phone modems, man. I remember back in the 90s having certain discussions with people who said, the internet's just a fad. It's just for geeks, nerds, and criminals. Yeah, in the early days, I heard people say that about the internet. It was for people intent on being secretive. The so-called dark web. Only geeks, nerds, and shifty under-the-radar people would use the internet. Non-users said it was too iffy and complicated for regular people. Now, where have we heard that before? Oh, and think of this. El Salvador bought over 1,000 bitcoins, average price around $41,000 to $45,000. And as we speak, as I do this show, bitcoin's in the upper 50,000s, which means those risk-taking dummies and idiots in El Salvador are up more than 25% on their investment in less than a half a year. Come on, when have you ever had an investment like that? To make 25% on an investment in just 1 year is unheard of. In fact, these days, even a 10% return on your investment per year is very difficult to achieve. And now, all of a sudden, lots of other third world countries are thinking about jumping on the Bitcoin standard. And it's little El Salvador, a country people couldn't even find on the map before, is schooling them. How about that? And suddenly, as a secondary effect, something's happening in El Salvador that never in a million years anyone would have dreamed of. There's a steady flow of nerds, geeks, and entrepreneurs setting up shop in little El Salvador. Exactly what every third world underdeveloped country dreams of, but never seems to happen. Hey, if you were an entrepreneur or had any kind of IT business at all, wouldn't you just love to go to a country where there's zero taxes? So anyway, as it's planned, once this billion-dollar bond issue gets going, Bitcoin City in El Salvador will become a fully functional city with residential areas, shopping centers, restaurants, a port, and everything centered around Bitcoin. And if you live, work, shop, or play there, the only tax you'll ever pay is the VAT tax, you know, the value-added tax, sort of a sales tax, which every country outside the U.S. has. Oh, and by the way, despite the poo-pooing from the U.S. government, the Fed, the IMF, etc., etc., in just a short 6 months, El Salvador has gained so much from their Bitcoin investment, they've got so much surplus from what they call the Bitcoin Trust, they have enough money to build 20 new schools and have already started to construct a $4 million new veterinary hospital in the capital, San Salvador, all coming from already realized Bitcoin profits. But still, the traditional monetary banksters won't back off. In fact, just the day after they announced Bitcoin City, the IMF warned El Salvador against using Bitcoin as official tender once again, which just goes to prove big banksters and the IMF are running scared. The sheep are leaving the barn and the banksters are all pissed off about it. Hey, someone had to be first and it just happened to be El Salvador. Oh, and we will be checking it out at the next Expat Insider Seminar. We're trying to hone in on early February. We'll let you know.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Y no Spanish.